Reconnect with CUNY. Whether you are a first-time college student, a parent, a veteran, or an adult with some college credits, there's a place for you to continue your dreams or start fresh. No matter where you are along your journey, the CUNY Reconnect program can provide financial assistance and one-on-one personalized support to get you going. It's not too late to start again. Go to cuny.edu/reconnect today.
Got Ebro, Lauren Rosenberg, Ebro in the morning. I want to introduce everybody. Yo, it's interesting, too, because it's the first day of Black History Month, and we have a young black, I think, billionaire who's building a stadium in Connecticut, who is a Harvard grad. He's a tech CEO. He's a great husband and father and family man, and he's started a soccer team. MLS pro soccer team, or at least a franchise, is MLS Next, right, in Connecticut, right, Andre?
Yeah, MLS Next Pro. A couple of things, though. I'm not a billionaire. I've done pretty well, but I'm not quite a billionaire. And I went to UConn, man. I'm a UConn Husky. I'm not a
UConn.
I'm not a Harvard
guy. All right, there it is. There it is. Okay, cool. So MLS Next, which is pretty much professional soccer. It's minor league professional soccer, correct? Is where you're starting.
Yeah, so MLS Next Pro, you could think of it as, you know, AAA baseball or, the G League to the NBA. So it's the second division of MLS.
And so
why did you sorry.
Oh, go ahead, Laura. Go ahead.
No, I'm just curious. Why did you pick soccer?
Yeah, so there's a bunch of reasons. Look, I growing up in the Bronx in the 90s, soccer wasn't the thing, right? Everybody in the fall played football or played basketball. My wife and I both ran track in college, so I was never a soccer player, but I had the opportunity to go to get a scholarship to the Hotchkiss School, boarding school up in Connecticut. In my dorm lived a cat named Shavar Thomas from Jamaica, another right down the hall from me, another kid, Alex Blake. Shavar ended up becoming the captain of the Reggae Boys, so the captain of the Jamaican national team.
Wow.
And we had a really good soccer team in high school, and there was, you know, all the coaches from all over the country and scouts from Europe and other things would be there. And so you just became a fan of your friends, right? They went off to the right. Under-17 World Cup, and the whole school was cheering for them. Going to UConn led the country in attendance for Division I soccer as well. So even though I ran track, you know, athletes would all support each other. And so really just the fandom. And then when you look at the change in demographics and youth participation in sports in the country, soccer is really the fastest growing opportunity in terms of sports ownership. And then Connecticut being a resident in Connecticut is the most underserved and kind of the most densely populated and affluent media market in the country, without any NFL, any NBA, MLB, NHL, or MLS. And it's amongst the top viewers of soccer in the country. And so when I put all those things together, it just seemed like a transformational opportunity.
I love this. So Andre, the MLS Next Pro, if I, like, you know, we had this conversation, I forget, I think it was Mbappe just a second ago, got that stupid offer from the Saudi Arabia, it was like $1 billion contract to go play. He turned it down. But at the time, it's kind of like, yo, parents, I know your kid likes, you know, basketball or football, but are you seeing what's happening in soccer around the world? Maybe we need to, if you're interested in, you know, participating in professional sports and you want to make a lot of money, it feels like soccer's the direction things are going, at least internationally. Do you feel like this is an opportunity for young families or just young people in general to get involved in professional sports?
Yeah, no, for sure. Look, I think there's a couple of things, particularly when we talk about the domestic opportunity in the U.S. It's really going to be unprecedented between now and the end of this decade. So this summer you have Copa America, right, which is one of the largest tournaments in the world. So you're going to have Argentina and Brazil and all those teams coming up and playing in the U.S. Then next year you have the Club World Cup hosted in the United States again. Then 2026, you have the World Cup hosted in the United States. 2028, you have the Olympics, so both men's and women's soccer tournaments. And so you have, you know, four of the six largest tournaments in the world will be hosted on U.S. soil just over the next 4.5 years. So when you talk about the exposure for kids, I think, there's more professional soccer leagues in the world than there are basketball. There's, you know, virtually no professional football leagues in the world of any sort of real size outside of the U.S. and Canada. Baseball is increasingly becoming global, but in the big scheme of things is marginalized to only really, you know, 20 countries that have any sort of real baseball playing. And so soccer is far and away the largest sport in the world. And I think the United States is catching up. I think the challenge has been, particularly when you talk about working class areas or urban areas, is a lack of access for kids to be able to play soccer and get good coaching. We're the only really large country in the world where it's pay to play. Right. You know, growing up in the Bronx, for me, you could play police athletic league basketball for $20 registration. Right?
Right.
And there's a basketball court in every neighborhood in New York City.
And then you just show up with your shoes and you could play.
Yeah. Yeah. Soccer is a lot less accessible in urban areas. You don't have the fields or the pitches to play on. The teams sometimes are $4,000, $5,000, $6,000, $7,000 a year to be on any of these travel teams. And so one of the things that we're doing is we're launching a free youth academy in Connecticut as well. Which I think will just open and widen the pool for access for kids to be able to be able to play.
Two of my nephews play competitive soccer on the Jersey side. Caden, he actually goes to one of those high end schools, recruited him to go like an academy in Jersey, right? And then he went to MLS next, and then they offered him and his family, you know, opportunity to move to Colorado. You know, like literally at 16 years old, moved to Colorado with his family and start, you know, training to be on the professional level in the MLS. And then every weekend his family's driving to Philly, Maryland, you know, so even that, as you know, and they're, you know, they're a family of six, and you know, dad has a job, mom has a job, but they're a two parent home trying to share riding and commuting and dropping off, and this kid's got to go over. How do parents have time? Because not just the money to be in soccer, but the time to actually get your kid in these competitive outlets to even get into the professional system of soccer in the United States. How is that even possible?
Yeah, look, I mean, there's no way to sugarcoat it. Regardless of, you know, you could be wealthy, right? It's still a sacrifice. But I think, look, it doesn't matter if it's soccer or if it's tennis or it's you know, high level elite for any sort of sport or passion. I think it doesn't matter race or political affiliation. Parents all of us want opportunity for their kids, right? So
right.
So people will pack up in that car and sacrifice their social life and spend their whole weekend to go support their son or their daughter doing something. That's not going to change, right? Just having, you know, more resources or making the game more accessible to kids, that's not going to change the sacrifice that parents make for those opportunities. I think that the reality though is 99% of the kids aren't going to be on that elite level, right? So sometimes it isn't just about the elite players that can become pro. Obviously we're going to focus on our academy on those kids because you're trying to build your pipeline of professional players. But I think there's still the larger opportunity in terms of like community, and what's going to impact most parents is having the resources for that local team in Bridgeport, Connecticut, or in Stamford, Connecticut, or New Haven, or in Port Chester, or in Mount Vernon, or all these places where more kids can play. And a lot of that is local. So you're not, you know, that's, you just need 2 hours on a Saturday afternoon, right?
Right.
And so I think, you know, both my wife and I were D1 athletes, right? We both ran track at UConn where we met. I can't fathom if my parents, when I was growing up, you know, in the Bronx, if my parents had to pay $5,000, $6,000, $7,000 for me to play a sport, or frankly, the travel that you're talking about. I think what a lot of people know is my dad almost never was able to make it to, I think I can count on two hands how many times my dad came to a basketball match or a track meet, because he was working, right? So a lot of families can't make that. So it's traveling with the team, it's traveling with the parents of another family and stuff like that. But I think the bigger opportunity too is really accessibility even to go into the pro game, right? I maybe had a couple of times I went to Yankee Stadium to the $6 bleacher seats in the, you know, behind center field, right? Back as a kid. But you know, most families in the tri-state area can't afford to go to Giants and Jets and Knicks and all these games and stuff like that. And so I think one of the opportunities too, in terms of why we're building this new stadium in Connecticut, is accessibility even to go see professional sports, right? A lot of families don't have that time to commute 2 hours, 3 hours to Boston or New York and that expense. So I'm really excited. The feedback has been amazing from the community.
So when is the stadium, when will it be built, or is it already built in Bridgeport, Connecticut? So I was, when we were getting ready for this, I saw there was a major announcement of the MLS Next Pro. I guess they're calling it, CT United.
Yep. Yeah. CT United FC is the name of the team. We secured control of about 20 acres of land on the water in Bridgeport, Connecticut. It was an old Greyhound dog track.
Okay.
It's been closed for some time. So, you know, what we're trying to do is tear it down pretty soon over the next few months and do some remediation. We're aiming to have that stadium ready for summer of 25, the first phase. It is an aggressive goal, but it's something that, you know, we've been working on for over 3 years. And it's I think I appreciate more so now than I would have 3 years ago how difficult it is to find 20 acres of land in the northeast of the United States, close to a highway and close to public transportation.
Right.
You know, we're really excited about what we've been able to secure and kind of the opportunity it is for that stadium.
And you have the support of the mayor and the governor in the state. So this looks like it's going to happen. The only thing that may make it fall short is what, running out of money, which you have a lot of. So it's going to happen.
Look, I mean, it's always with any sort of these kind of public-private partnerships, and you see them, you know, very popular across the country in terms of whether it's the NFL or NBA or NHL, MLS, in terms of making this viable, a lot of the work is infrastructure, right? So it's raising, you know, the site is on the water, so it's raising from FEMA floodplain, it's sewage, it's remediation of the site to make it safe. So a lot of that stuff is infrastructure that I think is normally the expectation of a city or a state to provide so that the private capital can go to the project. And look, the first institutional investor that I had in my tech startup was the state of Connecticut. They got in at a $1.5 million valuation, and the state of Connecticut got out at well over $100 million. Mm. So I've been kind of I've made a lot of money for the state in terms of the projects that I've done, and I don't expect this to be any different. You know, it's a challenge. It's not just the state. It's working with the community, with zoning and community leaders, and everybody's been really exciting because of the economic impact that this could have.
Well, look, man, this is dope. One, two, this is a dope way to start Black History Month, to meet we'll just call you a hundreds and hundreds of millionaire Black man from the Bronx.
Soon to be billionaire.
Soon to be billionaire, who's part of the MLS, movement. And so now you have an MLS Next team and a stadium. When do you actually level up, or what's that process to where? Because you're the only Black owner too in MLS.
Yeah, I mean, what's shocking is I'm the only Black owner, principal Black owner, right? Majority Black owner of a team for any of the major leagues associated with NFL, MLB, NBA, NHL, or MLS right now, right? And so that's something I didn't, you know, because after Michael Jordan sold the Hornets, there is no majority Black owner of any of those teams in those leagues. And so that's a bit, you know, intimidating, frankly, to be as well, and some pressure, but whatever, it is what it is. Our ownership group is we're in some conversations and expanding, and we look to put in a formal bid for the full MLS team. So kind of we have the MLS Next Pro, which is kind of the minor league team of MLS. We're going to have the Youth Academy, and then we have the stadium project. And so we feel that we have the best infrastructure of any potential expansion market in the country. And we think also we can really reinvigorate the New York City media market too. You know, what's the biggest show in town in college basketball is UConn, right? Yeah. There's a reason St. John's doesn't even want to play UConn at Madison Square Garden.
Oh, he's talking crazy now. Yo, he's going left.
Listen.
This is going left.
No. This is – so, listen.
I'm just playing with you.
It is what it is, right? The big show in town in Madison Square Garden for college basketball
is UConn.
You know, Seton Hall fans are great. Rutgers fans are
cool.
Oh,
he going – oh, St. this John. Is getting nasty.
Listen. No. I'm just nasty. Keeping it real. I'm keeping it real. St. John fans are great. But the big show for college basketball is UConn. When UConn comes to town, that's when the tickets are most expensive in the Garden. That's when the crowd is raucous.
I mean, St. John's might have something to say over the next couple of years. We're going to see what Rick Pitino does.
What about Seton Hall? Our guy's the coach now, Rosenberg.
Yeah, listen, these teams are all great, right? But all of them combined, right? Every other team in the Northeast combined, right? Every other team in the Northeast combined has won less championships than you.
Oh,
right?
Man, he took it up a notch.
So, like, there's an opportunity. So Connecticut has already shown that it could build powerhouse teams.
What I was going to say, the community in Connecticut clearly are rabid sports fans, right, in many different ways. And so they deserve what you're bringing them. And they're going to show up because it's their it'll be their franchise.
Yeah, exactly. They're loyal. They're prideful. They're some of the best fans in the country. And then even when I look at the opportunity for the New York City tri-state, I think just rivalry. Look, I'm the only owner from New York City. I'm the only, you know what I mean? So everybody could say, you know, the Red Bulls are in Jersey. NYC is moving to Queens. They're leaving the Bronx. I'm from the Bronx. And so when I look at the opportunity, so when I look at the opportunity for the tri-state area, I think we could all battle it out for to be the kind of dominant player in the tri-state.
Well, Andre, it sounds like you're ready for the smoke. If parents want to, you know, let's say they have a kid in college or a kid in high school that professional soccer's their path. Is there a process for kids to be seen by your youth? What is it called? The Youth Academy or even MLS Next Pro? How does this work?
Yeah, no, absolutely. So I think the best thing would be, and we've already had, I think, well over 600 parents reach out to us just in the last couple of weeks about, hey, how can my kid try out for a team? CTUnited.com, CTUnited.com, and right there you can go and link to the academy, sign up for the newsletter, and we'll share information about tryouts that we'll have. Multiple locations tryouts that we're going to have this spring for kids to try out for the Youth Academy. We already have had a full-time scouting team in place for over 2 years, going to high school and travel team and college matches. We have a team out in St. Kitts right now at a combine. We're in Central America, so we're actively trying to build a team. We're not just doing this to be around. Like, I want to be good. I want to win. Like, I'm too... my ego couldn't handle losing. I don't know how owners do that. So we're trying to be good. It's crazy because my publicist told me, do not say you're going to win. But, you know, it is what it is.
Like, well, it's too late.
We're gonna try to, it's too late now.
So whatever trouble you get into, don't blame it on your publicist.
Exactly. Exactly.
Andre Swanson, and it's pronounced Swanston, correct?
Swanston.
Yeah. Yes, Andre Swanson representing the BX. He is the principal owner of CT United up there in Connecticut. New stadium 2025, Youth Academy on the way, MLS Next Pro. Andre, listen, man, thank you for just being an amazing black man and representing in the business world and representing in the sports world as well. And thank you for coming on this show and telling us what you have going on.
Reconnect with CUNY. Whether you are a first-time college student, a parent, a veteran, or an adult with some college credits, there's a place for you to continue your dreams or start fresh. No matter where you are along your journey, the CUNY Reconnect program can provide financial assistance and one-on-one personalized support to get you going. It's not too late to start again. Go to cuny.edu/reconnect today.